From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Bolivia's new interim regime, headed by self-declared President Jeanine Añez, is attempting to settle in, signing a deal to call back military forces from patrolling and attacking protesters. Añez has also announced new elections to take place without former President Evo Morales, who was forced to step down just weeks ago. She has also annulled the results of the last race that he won. Meanwhile, protests continue around Bolivia with hundreds and thousands of Morales supporters marching to demand his returns and many mourning the killings of protesters. Hundreds of activists and scholars in the United States and around the world have now signed on to a letter saying, quote, "We condemn the violence in the strongest terms and call on the U.S. and other foreign governments to immediately cease to recognize and provide any support to this regime." We turn now to Medea Benjamin, co-founder of the human rights group Global Exchange and the peace organization Code Pink. She's a longtime political activist and prolific author. She just returned from a trip to Bolivia. Welcome to the program, Medea.
Thanks for having me on, Sonali.
So what were you in Bolivia to do, and when were you there?
I was there for the past week, and I was there to try to get an understanding about what was going on. It was very hard from the U.S. media to get any sense of what happened. I had read the OAS, the Organization of American States report, alleging that there was fraud in the elections. I also saw the refutation of that by the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And I felt it was important to go down and get a sense of how this conflict was unfolding and what we in the United States could do.
Were you able to travel to some of the areas in Bolivia, such as Cochabamba, that enjoys strong support from for Morales, and that was also the site of a recent massacre of 9 people?
I was planning to go to Cochabamba when the massacre happened in the city above La Paz called El Alto, and I felt that I had to stay there to try to capture the voices of the local people. And
so the massacre actually happened near Cochabamba?
No, that was the first massacre happened near Cochabamba. The second massacre happened when I was down there, that happened near La Paz. And so I decided not to go to La Paz, to Cochabamba, instead focus on doing some firsthand reporting from the massacre that happened near La Paz. It's also important to understand that because of all the blockades that the pro-Evo Morales people had put up, there was not even any bus transportation between La Paz and Cochabamba. That main road was totally blocked. Quite remarkable to see a major highway that had been cut into pieces by local residents in many different places, so that there was no transport that was happening between La Paz and Cochabamba except by airplane.
So what did you find out about this massacre, the second one that you mentioned, and who has been responsible? Because right now there's a humanitarian organization that has said that it will be attempting to investigate the human rights abuses. I believe it is the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights has sent members and representatives to parts of Bolivia. So tell me what you found out.
Yes, I was at some of those meetings as well. The center of the conflict there was a gas plant called Sencata, which is where the gasoline for La Paz comes from. And because the local residents had surrounded that gas plant and put up blockades in the roads, there was no gas getting out, and the shortage was being felt in La Paz. The blockades were also affecting the delivery of food. So you saw long lines for things like meat and chicken and eggs. Cooking gas was hard to get, and people were complaining very much about this. But so the government decided that they were going to break the blockade and sent in helicopters, tanks, heavily armed soldiers, who then fought with local residents to break up this blockade. And there were 9 people confirmed dead, dozens and dozens were injured. We were at several of the local clinics that had been turned into makeshift hospitals, where the health personnel were working under very difficult conditions to try to treat people with gunshot wounds. We saw people lined up first in those makeshift clinics who were killed. Then they were taken over to a local church that was turned into a morgue. And the government was lying all the time about what happened, saying that this was a clash, that the protesters were the violent ones, which is not true at all. It's important to note, Sonali, that as part of this coup, the government has taken over the media and intimidated any journalists, local ones, that want to report the truth. And so people are given a constant stream of propaganda that the protesters are communists, that they're terrorists, that they had dynamite, that they're violent, when in reality, it was the government, through a decree that you mentioned, who gave immunity to the soldiers to just go out and shoot. And so that's what happened in Sankata, a terrible massacre. And that is why I stayed in El Alto, the largest indigenous city in Latin America, which is very much against the coup and has been and continues to be speaking out to say that that coup government must go.
Maria, the situation in Bolivia is being cast in a sort of a black and white manner in many media outlets. If you read the mainstream news, you essentially hear that this interim president took over because she felt compelled to stop a dictatorial regime. If you read the left media, Morales is, you know, pure and has done nothing. Absolutely nothing wrong and is entirely on the side of the people. There's some contention with that. Let's talk about the mainstream media coverage first. Are you troubled by the way in which Jeanine Añez in particular is being portrayed, even though she has very openly expressed religious, fundamentalist religious views that are very much against indigenous communities? And of course, 60% of Bolivia is, and you know, are indigenous people.
Well, I was in Bolivia. I didn't follow as closely the mainstream media in the U.S., but I know in general that the way this was portrayed is that Evo Morales had done a terrible thing by staying in power too long. There are certainly people in Bolivia who were pro-Evo Morales, but did not like the fact that he didn't abide by a referendum that would have prohibited him from seeking another term and instead went to the courts that gave him the okay to do that. That might have been a big mistake. That doesn't justify in any way the coup that happened and the viciousness and the racism that has surfaced as part of this coup. Let's face it, Bolivia has always been a divided society, but Evo Morales did a very, very good job in 13 years of bringing the society together by lifting up the people at the bottom, by giving voice to the indigenous people. It's quite remarkable to this day to go inside the assembly in both the Senate and the Chamber of Deputies and see all of these indigenous people who are representing their communities at the highest levels of government. And then economically, he did fantastic things that tremendously improved the infrastructure, the ability of farmers to get a better deal for their products, the educational system, the general population has had tremendous increases in their standard of living in the last 13 years. So what has really come out is not because of mismanagement of the economy. It's about power. It's about the revenge of the white European descendant class that never liked the fact that indigenous people were in the presidency and in the top levels of government. And so they unleashed this incredible racism in the beginning, burning the indigenous flag called the Huipala, that angered people so much, having attacks against the indigenous community that was not just these two massacres that we mentioned, but was also rounding up people and throwing them in jail, hundreds and hundreds of people. I stayed at a hostel that was two blocks from one of the jails, And you could see there every single day people streaming in the country from the countryside trying to get their loved ones out of prison who were merely taking part in nonviolent protests. So lots of waves of racism have been unleashed, and it's very worrisome as to the future of Bolivia if these racists maintain and strengthen their grip on power.
I want to bring up a Washington Post article, November 20th, entitled "The Real Story Behind the Bolivia Protests Isn't the One You're Hearing," and lists what the authors say are three key oversimplifications, including the military not being the only force pushing Morales out. And I know that you mentioned there were some communities that were upset with Morales not respecting the results of the referendum on whether he should have ongoing terms. Also, this article mentioned that indigenous Bolivians were increasingly divided over Morales and that his legacy is complicated because he was being pressured from the left for not being progressive enough on the issue of extractive industries. Would it be fair? Of course, now, interestingly enough, this article did not take the time to, or, you know, did very briefly mention what it called a pattern of deadly retaliation under interim president Jeanine Añez. But I'm wondering if it would be fair to say that the legitimate concerns of particularly indigenous-led communities against Morales have been taken advantage of by right-wing forces who have used that rift to topple over and try to undo all of the good things Morales did when the opposition that he was facing was from the left, not the right.
Well, he has been facing tremendous pressure from the right all along when he tried to privatize natural resources of Bolivia and to reduce the amount of land that some of these largest landowners have had. And then he faced criticism from the left, some of the extractivism. But it's also necessary to understand that anybody who's been in power in 13 years is going to get criticism from many sides. And he certainly did. And despite that, he did manage to lift up the lives of millions of people. So I think you're right in that some of these divisions were taken advantage of by the coup leaders. But it should be clear that a lot of the people who criticize Morales from the left are now horrified about who is in power. And it's been very interesting being on the streets every day for this last week and really hearing that the cries of the people were not for Evo Morales to return. The unified cry was for the government, the coup government, to go. And there were even people who had signs saying, "We're not part of a political party." They wanted it to be as broad as possible, the opposition to this coup, and not be one that focused on one person.
So then let's talk about these new elections that the interim regime has announced. They are seemingly desperate to try to appear more democratic than they are, even though the manner in which Añez took power is highly undemocratic. So in announcing new elections that Morales has been specifically excluded from, what is the issue there? Is it possible that this new election could be an instrument for a return to democracy, or are these clearly skewed from the start?
I think it's pretty impossible to think about free and fair elections under a racist, elitist, white-led government that has taken over in Bolivia right now. They have done so much in just 2 weeks to overturn a lot of what Evo Morales had put in place, even though their job is only supposed to be to oversee elections. For example, they've put in place a whole new cabinet. They've changed the country's relationship with the outside world, breaking ties with Bolivia, sending home over 700 Cuban doctors, making relationships with some of the right-wing governments in Latin America. They have been forced, because of the criticism, mostly internally, but also some externally, to make some concessions, like rescind the decree that gave a green light for the military to attack protesters violently. They also agreed that they would hold a series of meetings with grassroots groups, and they've already agreed that the people who have been attacked, killed, hurt by the military should receive compensation, that those who have been jailed unjustly should be released. But it is very difficult to see how these elections could be good. I think it's important for people to know that the Organization of American States has a big hand to play in this coup. 60% of its budget is given by the United States. It really responds to the desires of the US government. And it was the OAS that originally said that there was irregularities in the elections without providing real documentation for that.
And I understand so far there's yet to be any documentation, any evidence of any wrongdoing or electoral fraud, at least enough to overcome Morales's lead on his closest rival, right?
Absolutely. And so the OAS has done this in other places, and we have to say we don't want the OAS involved in these next elections. And the important thing is there is already United Nations there, but it shouldn't just be United Nations. There are Bolivians who are now putting out a call for non-partial international observers to come, as well as grassroots groups to send delegates and be inspecting not only on the day of the election, but before the election to see what the conditions are like. So that is something that we will be doing as Code Pink in conjunction with many other organizations, not only in the United States, but with Europeans and other Latin American countries.
Let's talk about the statement that a number of people signed on to, 800 people apparently, signed on to a statement on human rights violations in Bolivia, including some very prominent folks like Angela Davis and Noam Chomsky and many others. I'm not sure if your name is on this, Mattia. I'm looking at this really lengthy list.
It's on there.
It's on there, I'm sure. Yeah, okay. So tell me about this statement and what it means in terms of the international solidarity that what Morales has represented, you know, is getting, and why it's important for people to come together.
Evo Morales represented the first time in 500 years that Bolivia has had an indigenous person, or that all of Latin America has had an indigenous person as leader of the country. Evo Morales was also important in the coalition called ALBA with the Venezuelans and Cubans and Nicaraguans and other progressive Latin American countries that wanted to have a different economic system and that would help each other. That is something that the new government immediately pulled out of ALBA. Evo Morales represented hope to indigenous people all around the world, including here in the United States. It was a matter of great pride to people to have him be the leader of Bolivia and be a leader globally of indigenous rights. And so it is a tremendous blow. And I think it's important that these 800 plus people signed on to this letter and that we keep soliciting support for the people in Bolivia who are rising up against this coup, and that we have a very keen eye towards what this coup is setting up, what kind of repression they are unleashing against the indigenous people, and how we can continue to monitor this situation and be in solidarity with them, as well as with Evo Morales, because we have to recognize what he accomplished in 13 years for his country, for Latin America, and for the world. And the fact that he is secluded now in a military base in Mexico and is facing charges in Bolivia, completely unfair charges.
Right, they've declared him a terrorist and accused him of sedition.
Absolutely. They're saying that from Mexico, he has ordered these blockades to keep food from getting in the hands of people in the cities, that he has orchestrated a lot of the violence that has gone on. And I can tell you that people are not responding to Evo Morales. They're not even responding to his party, the MAS party. They're responding to their own anger about the racism of the new government, the disrespect for their culture and their traditions. And they're rising up a neighborhood by neighborhood, grassroots organizations. So it's important for us to stand with them and the call that Evo Morales be allowed to go back to Bolivia. They have now signed an election law that would not allow him to stand for president again. And he said he is fine with that, but he should certainly be allowed to go home and to participate in the organizing and the rebuilding of his party, the MAS party, that has taken such a beating in the last few weeks. And while it is unclear who is going to run for president from either side, I certainly know that the MAS majority in the legislative branch is important to keep, and that having Evo be able to participate in encouraging people to go out to vote, encouraging people to regroup and strengthen the MAS party is something he should have the legal right to do.
Maria, finally, one of the issues that has been coming up around Bolivia and the effective coup that Morales was forced to resign under is the issue of Bolivia's natural resources, in particular lithium. There have been some people speculating that since countries like Canada or China are interested in having access to lithium, an industry that Morales was loath to privatize or allow privatization of, that might have been one of the reasons for the coup. Do you have any thoughts on this issue of natural resources like lithium and the role that it might play in what's happening in Bolivia right now?
I think the natural resources in Bolivia has played a tremendous role. People have fought for water rights against privatization. They fought for natural gas against privatization. And now they're fighting for the lithium. And it's not only the extraction of the lithium. There were plans with Germany that the lithium would be used to develop the electric batteries that would be it's in so great demand now with the global clamor to move off of fossil fuels, but that should be done inside Bolivia. So it wouldn't just be extraction, but Bolivia would actually benefit from manufacture. I think what we will see is it will go back to the extraction model, and that the people of Bolivia won't be the beneficiaries of that.
Well, Maria, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to the statement that we were discussing that you and others have signed on to. Is there a website for Code Pink that you'd like to give out?
Yes, codepink.org/Bolivia News has a very extensive compilation of the live stream videos that I did from Bolivia, of articles that we have written, as well as other materials. So it's a great place to keep up on things. And one of the best things we did down there was develop very good contacts with Bolivian groups, and they are constantly sending us materials, so we will keep that updated.
That's codepink.org/Bolivia News, and we'll provide a link to that from our website as well. Maria, thank you so much for all you do and for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Maria Benjamin. She's the co-founder of the human rights group Global Exchange and the peace organization Code Pink, a longtime political activist and prolific author. She just returned from a trip to Bolivia. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.